Welcome to the Heart Rate Variability Podcast. Each week we talk about heart rate variability and how it can be used to improve your overall health and wellness. Please consider the information in this podcast for your informational use and not medical advice. Please see your medical provider to apply any of the strategies outlined in this episode. Heart Rate Variability Podcast is a production of Optimal LLC and Optimal HRV. Check us out at optimalhrv.com. Please enjoy the show. Welcome, friends, to the Heart Rate Variability Podcast. I am thrilled to have Greg Elliott back on the show. If you did listen to our first conversation, you just might want to pause this, go back there. I have so much respect for Greg. Early on in my HRV journey, I found his course. I bought the course, and for about the next week, I continued to replay it over and over and over and over again. I just wanted to download Greg into my brain because he's one of the great thinkers about heart rate variability. And so I'm thrilled, Greg, to have you back on the show to nerd out with you about what you're currently interested in. But before we jump into that, just if folks are new to your work, just a quick introduction. And I would love a little bit update of what you're working on now. It's been a few months since we've talked. So I'll sit back with our audience and get an update on what is Greg doing for us right now.
Yeah, absolutely, man. It's always great to talk to you. And I love the stuff that you're, you know, keep in touch with you and from a distance. And it's great to see all the work that you're doing as well to be able to spread the word of how to make impact in people's lives. So, you know, keep going. And I absolutely love it. But quick story about me, an osteopath, exercise physiologist, dealing with HRV for the last decade, helping individuals. Primarily what I say is more the functional illnesses, the chronic pain, the fibromyalgia types, the people that suffer from chronic fatigue syndrome. So a lot of those areas that people are really struggling. And even to a point of people that have, you know, sleep issues or energy issues and be able to kind of optimize their health and well-being. So diving, quite deep into that. As I said, the last decade I've been doing it. And so I'm doing a lot more one-on-one work with individuals as we start to be able to do that now, really trying to be able to understand the next level of where we can take this HRV journey and how we can actually impact this and how can we dive pretty deep and start to be able to look at, all the levers that we can possibly pull and how to be able to help people live long, healthy, happy lives.
Well, and I love talking to you because you're one of those people, and I feel like a lot of us get there. You've just been there for longer. Like I said, you helped me on my journey of you've been working with this biometric for so long that we kind of can hit walls with it at times. And, you know, on the podcast, talking to some of the best researchers in the world, it's so fun to find, because I think this is where we continue to work, is you push up against, you know, either what we know about heart rate variability, what it's telling us, the usefulness of it, or just where our research sort of has left off and where we got more room to grow. So this is why I love talking to folks like yourself with this. So I'm just curious right now, where do you find yourself in your journey, especially with, you know, the amazing work you're doing with folks right now?
Yeah, it's the biggest thing is connecting a lot of people in the HRV space and just knowing what they're doing. And not only that, it's kind of the health and well-being space and how that can tie into this. And you're seeing a lot of phenomenal work on the psychosocial, the emotional side of things around heart rate variability and all the work that's being done out there. There's a group of people that are looking in, they're doing some research in Australia right now, that looks at, can they start to look at emotional intensity and valence in regards to what's going on? Do we actually have information from our wearables that can give us indications of, do we have a more of a positive or negative emotion around the things? We know HRV is great for emotional intensity, but we don't know, you know, what our physiological reaction to that or what our mentality around that intensity is. And so there's a lot of phenomenal work that can be done in that space too. So just growing. Again, this is ahead of some of the stuff that's out there and kind of contradictive to what people think. And so this is where, you know, I love research from the standpoint, but it's very much to the point of everything looks in the past. Yeah. You're looking backwards. What did everything say? Yeah. Not what can we look at and what do we see? And this is the value of people that are in the field like us that start to see these things that aren't complete, that maybe we can make more sense of things and be able to try and be able to see, hey, is this something we can do on the road? And and really impact lives. And we may not know the exact mechanisms as to why things change or why things occur, but we can see it on a day-to-day, a week-to-week, a month-to-month basis with the people that we help. And so it's that longing of like, well, let me look into this a little bit more and see what I can possibly do to kind of make sense of this. And it may not be crystal clear, but there's something there that can tie it in. And then after a while, eventually the researchers get there. But yeah. I mean, the amount of times that I heard when, you know, that HRV can't be used for concussion management, that HRV isn't a good indication of your overall health status, like all these things, right? You heard this in the past, and not until research came out to disprove a lot of those things and see the value of all these meta-analyses now. And research reviews around what it's correlated to and how it can help people is people are starting to make a noise, and now it's getting to the consumers in that standpoint. But I'm super excited about the future. I think, again, we're scratching the surface of what this biometric can provide us. And it's only a matter of time before this, it's really transformative to a vast majority of people.
Yeah, so there's two ways that I wonder how you're, because it might be both you're thinking this way. One is, you know, I think one of the big challenges for folks like ourselves or that are in the biometric business is what else can we bring in to this? And what does that mean when you do something like, you know, glucose levels and heart rate variability? And what do those show you? We bring those together, or blood pressure, you know, or steps. Steps is an interesting one because does it really tell you anything? Kind of question marks in the research that means you're moving, which I think let's maybe not throw it out if it works for people. You know, so that is kind of on one hand is what do we kind of add to learn more about? The other one that I'm fascinated with too, and I wonder if you've thought about is, okay, so RMSSD, SDNN might be good for those 3-minute readings, but what is like high frequency telling us there? There's like all these metrics that we collect and, you know, I don't like, can we put them together in different ways to learn more specifically where we're at? So I kind of wonder, how are you thinking about some of these next few years where you would like to lead the research as one of the progressive thinkers in this area?
That's actually a really good point in regards to like how all these biometrics kind of tie together, right? We know there's associations between our physiology and what some of these statistics show. Mm-hmm. But I think it's the combination of these things, of adding these two things together or adding weighted this higher than that seems to be the next wave. Again, a lot of these companies that are looking at heart rate variability get a lot of information with their machine learning algorithms. They look at all the statistics and what all the statistics tell, and they may say, hey, these two at these specific instances give us indication around A, B, and C. Yeah. So you start to see the combination of all these things together because it's not just one metric. Now, I like to make things a little more simple. I try to make things black and white. And I always kind of talk about now about these. I learned it from Don Moxley. I don't know if you've met Don Moxley at all. Yeah. So he always talks about big rocks, right? Yeah. What are the big rocks, right? Yeah. If you haven't heard Don, you got to listen to some of the stuff. He's a really funny guy. But I always, and it really resonated with me is like, I like to think of big rocks first, right? Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that I know for sure that's kind of in my realm, which is what I deal with, I think in the statistic that seems to impact me, is talking about the RMSSD, and let's kind of start with that, right? Yeah. So that's what the foundational one, the kind of umbrella one that says, hey, let's start with there and see what we can possibly do and see what influences that specific value. And let's work on that area. And then you dive into, again, my biggest three that I work as a practitioner in is going to be your dietary requirements and what necessarily your replenishment, your refueling, your physical activity, how much you move, all those type of areas and all that. And lastly is going to be the sleep and recovery aspect of it all. And so what I've dived in significantly more into now is starting to get more nuanced with those approaches from that. And you talk about, you know, doing this for a long time. I just last week did a webinar with Jason Moore, my long-term business partner there from the Foundations course. It was like a flashback. It was crazy. But the one thing that I noticed for sure, since it's been many years since we did one of those webinars, is the fact that sophistication of the questions that are coming in.
Yeah.
Right. Way high level people really understand the idea. I want a more nuanced, hey, specifically this, what does this show a lot more? People are getting way more educated about about heart rate variability and health and all those interconnected areas in that standpoint. So it's, I love it, the fact that people are being way more educated. But the problem with that is the fact, yes, you can be so nuanced in that in regards to saying, hey, does this supplementation improve heart rate variability? Yeah. Right? Because, well, yes, but what is that supplement doing to your physiology? Are you deficient in it that way to be able to actually improve it? Right.
Right.
I'll never recommend HRV supplements. I'll never recommend, you know, this is great for sleep, or this is great. This specific diet is the only diet in particular. Like it's way more nuanced necessarily than that. And so it depends how people want to dive in is to all those areas, but I try to dive in super deep into all those areas to get specific advice to be able to improve, and then use that umbrella RMSSD to start with from our side of things. Not saying that anyone's unvalid, but again, big rock for me is that. But those other markers are absolutely important, and it gives me indications of when to start to be able to have different interventions and different people come in on board when those other statistics are off.
That's awesome. So, like, how do you do that? Because I find it interesting. I've been thinking a lot about how AI could help. We collect all this data, and AI actually gives you really good advice. Like, if I put in, like, you know, and I owe you for RMSSD. That's the that course was why it's like, okay, you know, Jason Gregg said RMSSD, best research model. That's where we started with Optimal. You know, and looking at this, and so you throw, like, here's my reading, my last week's reading, my last month's average, all, and it gives you really good advice. It's just if you do the same thing the next day, it kind of gives you the exact same advice, which I think is not a weakness of necessarily the AI. One is we got to get customizable inputs in there in some ways, but it's what you should do. You should get 8 hours of sleep tonight. You should eat anti-inflammatory food. You should maybe get some zone 2 activity in. Like, it is really actually giving really good advice. It's probably going to be the same if your HRV is down. You're going to get one set of advice, which is actually really good advice. If it's up, it'll probably give you a little bit something else. So I wonder, like, knowing this issue is there, like, how do you dive in around things like sleep? I would love to hear, because it's been kind of a theme of the show and my work lately around nutrition, because it's such a tricky thing. Just love to hear how you work with people to dive in deeper on these issues.
Yeah, because it was brought up, and this was, you know, Jason and I went back and forth a little bit about this, because someone talked about the ketogenic diet and heart rate variability, and it's absolutely, you know, research around the benefits of that. But I think if people are drawing different conclusions as to why that is beneficial in certain areas. But yeah, each of those areas you dive in, and obviously, you know, having a background in exercise physiology, you know, diving into some of the exercise performance realms of things, looking again at the VO2 max, but obviously to the point of the different stages and why things are occurring with those areas, looking at strength and power and speed, and measuring those objectively in regards to your performance, how well you move, your biomechanics, do we move efficiently, do we not move efficiently? All this is going to tie into heart rate variability into many different ways. So we look at those and break those down. They have different areas of importance on that stuff. But again, we want to look at red flags into that. So that's where we look at the movement side of things. You know, do we have the capabilities to be able to be more active? Where are the limitations to be able to implement those limitations? I think people now are very aware of, and by the time people see me, typically steps isn't a problem. Steps is there. People know about the steps. They're dialed in. If they're, you know, tracking all this type of stuff, they're pretty dialed in how many steps they do, and they know it's quite obvious, right? So you're looking at a little bit higher level from there. But you know, people that have, you know, fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue syndrome, it's about pacing and all those aspects, and so we start to work on those type of things. But again, it's all these data and steps. Highly inaccurate, a bunch of devices, but against relative data in my standpoint, right? Someone said they did, you know, look at the data. One day was 2,000, another day 4,000. More likely, they just moved more than that the other day.
Right? Exactly. Yep.
That's the big thing. So exercise, you know, it's always been a part of my life. I've been doing it, again, you know, since 2011, since all these exercise testing. So I'm very familiar, and we've had that pretty dialed in for a long time. Diving into the next big thing, which would be dietary recommendations, that kind of ties into overall health and well-being, is that with the clinic that we're at, we have naturopathic doctors and medical doctors. We can order a significant amount of blood work. There's a lot of stuff that's not accessible in Canada comparatively, you know, some of the blood work stuff, but through naturopathic doctors and medical doctors, we can get some pretty good amount of blood work. And we've developed some pretty good algorithms to start to look at, you know, what is going on underneath the hood from you? Do we have a protein deficiency, magnesium deficiency? Are we chronically or acutely dehydrated? Do we have, you know, digestive inflammation? Do we have bacterial infection or parasites? All this stuff could be drawn for the blood work and biomarkers that we indicate from there to give us more specific needs in regards to an individual. But then it ties into the point of the other areas, which is, you know, the other objective data, which is called, you know, body composition, and partnering with a local company that does DEXA scans and all those areas. And then there's also the tie in the struggle of all this is the contextual information of all those things, right? If you're dealing with someone that has deficient protein needs and their blood lipids are super low and all bad, but they're vegan and they don't want to change. All right, well, you got to work into that area or to the point of like, hey, I can't eat that food because it just destroys my gut in regards to, you know, I get so bloated or it hurts or whatever it may be. And then you work on some of those allergies from that standpoint. So you really got to be able to figure out, work with what the objective data says, what the subjective person knows, and work with into those in particular to kind of have a specific plan for those individuals. And it comes to, I mean, you know, people just don't like the taste of certain foods, and so they're not gonna do it, right? And as I have to selfishly say with this side of things, and I always hate to say this, but ever since I've had a kid, I've been avoidant of anything, a type of seafood, and it's the smell. I don't know what it, and I know it's phenomenal for you, absolutely, many different areas.
And you're in Vancouver, right? I mean, I'm
a block away from the ocean. Right. But I can't do it. I can't eat it.
That's hilarious.
So I know. So, you know, a lot of my markers, everything from health history and all this stuff. So I'm like, yeah, but I'm not going to do it. Sorry. Like, I can force myself to do it, but it's just like, it's such a struggle. And so I try to incorporate as much as I can, but for that way, I got to be able to supplement with other things or whatever it may be able to do. But yeah, it's, as you know, I'm sure you've had the struggles of the nuances of the dietary recommendations and what to be able to do from a health perspective. It's just it's a real mess. But you really have to dive in. Again, we talk about the big rocks of things and start to make some decisions based on that.
So you're collecting all this data. You know, I'd love to just see, you know, as you look at it in the context of heart rate, you know, your expertise in heart rate variability. What are some of those things that are sort of popping out at? Is it all individualized? Are you seeing some trends? I'd love to just kind of, as you sit with that and nerd out about the data. So sort of what are some of the things that you're learning along the way?
Yeah, that's phenomenal from that. And it's so true that, like, when you start to dive this deep into a lot of the blood work stuff, it is so specific. Like, yeah. I haven't seen trends, really. In people, it's crazy that there's not, you know, to a point where it's low because of this and this and that. And another difficult part is the fact you don't know how big of an improvement it actually has when you actually correct it, right? You can have two, three people that are chronically dehydrated, right? So whether the fact that they can't absorb water or the fact that they're just under hydrated from their side of things, you'd be able to correct one of those things. I had someone that literally doubled their HRV because they, you know, we got to the point where they actually be able to retain water, right? Comparatively to where I got someone to hydrate and it's just, I didn't make any difference. Other markers kind of relatively improved, but it's like from HRV perceptive, it didn't, right? And the reason why I like this aspect, again, a lot of things in health, and I've been saying this a lot of things in health aren't necessarily about ruling things in, it's about ruling things out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so when you can rule out dehydration, you can rule out these deficiencies in minerals, you can rule out exercises as a problem, you start to realize, okay, well, what's left?
Yeah.
Right. And this is where I love to have this conversation because, you know, most people are pretty dialed in. There's a couple of these changes that we can possibly make. Some may be a difference, but other people, it doesn't make a difference at all. We've had people that biohack like crazy and all this type of stuff, and their HRV is super, super low. And it just agrees. Well, listen, like, your physiology is phenomenal. Right, the inside is doing great. What about the external stuff now? It's time to have a conversation of like, how do you see the world?
Right.
How well do you regulate emotions? How well is your home life? Start to look at these other areas of like how they deal with their stress from the outside world, rather than internally, which they're so concerned about, and be able to bridge that conversation and be like, all right, it's now time. Right. And be able to work with companies like yourself to be able to provide that data and that information, that intervention for them to be able to take the next step to realize, again, very similar to when we go through blood work. I had no idea that I was deficient in folate, right? Yeah. In regards to that, it's you know, that's why your testosterone is low. That's why your red blood cell count is low. That's why your hemoglobin is all like, that's why all these things are low. Rather than going one by one to improve them, you just be able to correct the reason as to why that's low. Work on that. And again, it's, you clear those things up. It's to the point of, okay, now it's like you start to work on some of the stress management you have and how you view things and your mindset around your environment. And it's just like, I had no idea that it was this much of a stressful situation.
Well, that's what I love about this field is like, so for me coming from the mental health space, like folks like yourself have been such great teachers to me because now if I don't talk about movement, nutrition, and sleep, I like to say I'm setting that ceiling on how much I can help people. I can still help them, but if they're doing things to create inflammation and dysregulate the nervous system, then there's a ceiling there that I can help. And again, then I get to talk to an expert like yourself who's like, you know, I hit that ceiling from the mental health perspective. So talking about that and HRV, what I just love is that it gives us a language, a common language. And then the science, the autonomic nervous system and polyvagal theory and all this gives us this great science in which to say, okay, I may need to go to Greg for sleep and nutrition and how some of these other biometrics connect. Whereas, you know, looking at stress management and all these things, you know, comes from the mental health space. And it's like, oh, wait a minute, there's a whole mind body system here that might be interconnected.
I would love to ask you a question if that's okay.
Because yeah, please.
This is the big thing for me, because again, it's for a lot of the kind of people that I deal with, whether it's, you know, people that are suffering from chronic diseases or people that are at a higher level of hyper performance. And again, you know, as you go into the world, the people that you get kind of, again, like you get the same kind of people that kind of come to you. And one of the chronic things for me is that people that think that it's a physiological problem.
Yeah.
Right. And so, and then this is why I have, you know, again, start with the approach of dealing with the physiology and then to the point like, well, listen, there's nothing left. Right. Yeah. You know, there's like, I don't know how much more, like, you know, in the physiology side, if you're looking at different courses, right. And you have three courses that you're taking the semester, your physiology is at a 99%.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. But your GPA is not good. So let's take a look at the other areas and the other subjects that you're taking and see what's going on. And so that's where that conversation has. Do you have that same, but the other way around, where people obviously come to you from a mental health perspective, but don't realize the actual impact some of the physical interventions can have in regards to not only heart rate variability, but their mental health?
Yeah. I mean, you see that all the time, you know? So, you know, on one hand, you know, the work that I've done historically has been with those with complex trauma. So they're sort of coming in being devastated by what sort of happened to them in their life and just sometimes just absolutely horrific trauma. So coming to me as a therapist, and this is where I've had to really educate myself and just really get into the research is, yeah, I've got tools in my tool belt to help you with that processing of the trauma stuff. We've also got to talk about this. So this is where, you know, in our field, we call it psychoeducational work is, okay, I'm going to talk to you about pretty early on now, you know, sleep, nutrition, movement, but I got to talk to you about the why behind that, because you don't come to me to talk about nutrition. And boy, to get into that space, whoo, like I've got some feelings that lower my HRV about the history. And you know, I'm not an anti-capitalist, but I got some problems that I won't bring all those up here. You can go back to past episodes to listen to me been around that. So yeah, I mean I have to kind of do the justification of why I'm talking to you. And that is where I kind of call it trauma literacy. But that's kind of in our field. I think for you and I conversation, it's more like neuroliteracy. It's like, I got to give you that baseline understanding. Now I bring how trauma has impacted that and then talk about inflammation and other things about why I need, you know, to have these conversations. So let me kind of throw the question back at you in the same way is how do you kind of breach that? Because I think for me, in some ways it's easier because I mean, touching on movement, everybody knows they should move more. Everybody knows they should probably eat a little bit better, or now even sleep. People, I think, because of like folks like yourself, people now know that sleep is actually good for you. It's not a sign of laziness anymore. So I think we got there, my friend. Great work.
Yeah, exactly.
But so I think I have it maybe a little easier. I wonder how, from your perspective, because reaching that it might be a marital issue or a stress management, that seems like you get maybe a little bit more touchier ground coming from it from that angle.
No, it absolutely is, right? And so it's one of the things, and you, the same way in your things, is you have to be able to do things to establish trust with the person, as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
Right? Not that I'm the know-all be-all, or I'm this, I'm that. It's like, I'm here with you to be able to try to figure out what's going on, right? And we're going to do this together from that. But yeah, it's, you do get a little bit of hesitation. I think obviously the pushes with the mental health understanding, especially with COVID and all type of stuff, I think that's obviously shifted in regards to that. But I think it's almost people are in denial a little bit, that the fact that their mind could have as much impact on their body. Because almost like I won't let it do it. It's like, it's a sign of weakness, like to a degree, that it's like, hey, my mind can kind of like make my body feel a specific way, or impact my health and well-being in that way. And so it's that quantifiable nature, but very similar to you, is that first conversation you talk about that stuff. And so how I talk about it is obviously, why are they there to see me? What are the kind of symptomology? Give me the story behind it all to get a really deep understanding. It's like a little bit of a detective work. And you start to go to the things that they feel comfortable and why they're seeing you. Talk about their medications they're using and diagnose any conditions, what their blood work at, what's their physical activity. And you start to be able to just have a conversation the way they see, they read and react. And the one thing that I've learned a lot with my mentors is they don't teach this in our areas, is how it, like, just look at somebody and how they react, like their body language and what the nonverbal cues into what is necessarily going on. And we start talking about stuff that they want to talk about versus stuff that they don't, the shift in mood, posture, tone, all those things. You start to realize like, oh, this is a big piece of the pie that we're going to have to unpack a little bit. And I don't know if they're ready at that point to talk about it or whatever it may be. You kind of have to make that clinical judgment to the standpoint. Yeah. But again, you talk to them about stuff that's comfortable at the beginning, stuff they know, stuff that they're reason why they see you. And they start shifting that conversation of like what happens. And they're like, again, like I had a client the other day talking to them about that, and they were making direct eye contact with me the entire time. As soon as they're talking about, how stress can impact, what's going on, they didn't look at me at all. Talking away, gazing, that type of stuff. And you're kind of like, all right, it's sensitive, because there was some very sensitive information that they were talking about that was, beyond my pay grade. It's in your pay grade at that point, but at least to the point, the conversation's there, it's on the table, we start doing things, and then we can kind of broach that conversation more and more. And then when they're ready to be able to do so, to be able to address it.
That's awesome. I wonder, just out of curiosity, because one of the things I love about heart rate variability is not only are we tracking, but we also can do HRV biofeedback, whether they're working with you to be at the highest level of performance for a marathon, or me to help heal childhood trauma, or anywhere in between, burnout, whatever it might be. So I wonder how you kind of think about that within the work that you do as well.
Yeah. So the what I always focus on is assessment. Yeah. Right. I want to have the most unbelievable assessments possible. Right. Yeah. Talking about to the funnel. I just taught a course with some personal trainers around exercise prescription and all that. And can what everyone wants is the end result.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
All they want is like, show me some cool ankle stretches, or better range of motion of my shoulder. I'm like, what's significantly more important is to be able to find that that's the problem.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Because I can show you a bunch of shoulder stuff and back stuff and hip stuff and knee stuff, but to the point, if you don't know when to apply those things and you just do it all the time, it's like, okay, that's not the best. Cause we'll go to a point, we'll break it down to the point that I find that it's like arm flexion to see the problem limitation outside. They go, how do I fix that? I'm like, there's a million videos on YouTube be able to fix that. Thousands. You can pick any of them. Right. But it's getting to the problem. And so I'll kind of break this into many, many pieces, but one of the things that once we kind of dial in some of this blood work stuff, this physiology side, you know, the exercise performance and the sleep aspect, I want to be able to incorporate, you know, some of this biofeedback in regards to the assessment piece as we start, you know, going through these initial sessions and what people can do. And when we think about things and do a protocol to look at that side of things of how much their mind plays in regards to their physiology. I always say that with, you know, when people do multiple morning readings in the morning back in the day, right? And they do one reading, then they do it again and do it again. It's like, oh, it's always different. I'm like, well, of course it is. Right? You're like, your physiology is not stagnant. Your mind's not stagnant, right? Like right. To a degree, if I had to do, you know, back in the day, if I had to do 5-minute reading and then I want to do it again, like I'm sitting 10 minutes in bed here. Like I want to get up and get going. Like I'm going to be anxious since my score is going to be all over the place. I might change my breathing or whatever. So it's going to be all over. So that's going to be, you know, that the big piece from biofeedback is I want to be able to start to figure a way to be able to put that into the assessment piece and provide some objectivity around that stress management side to show them to the point like, hey, this is how much, you know, we're impacting in that side of things. In regards to an intervention, it's absolutely phenomenal. And we had this question of in a lot of the webinars in regards to HRV biofeedback. But it's like, I find it very similar in its intervention in other type of interventions, in the fact that it's great to be able to, you know, to do the biofeedback, right? To be able to understand of getting into balance and all that type of stuff. But if you do that and then you go to a board meeting and you start ripping into people and start yelling at them and you're emotionally dysregulated, like literally like minutes afterwards, then what's the point of doing that?
No, right.
You know what I mean? So it's like, it's understanding, it's getting people to understand what is the purpose of doing this? It's to the point that in under conscious control, I can regulate my nervous system. And I know what it feels like. I'm in touch with it. I do it continuously. So when I have the recognition that I am dysregulated, I can bring myself back down to that specific area. So that's where I see kind of the value. It's almost to the point of like, oh, you know, I did my 30 minutes of walking today, but you're going, you know, eating a million calories in a day. It's like, well, what's the point of walking?
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Like if you're not doing anything else right, then what is an intervention? Granted, it's better than nothing.
Right.
But like, you know, but you're doing this stuff, you're making this effort that you're wasted 30 minutes of your day doing things because everything else is ridiculous. And so that's my hope with biofeedback. This next realm is again, the abundance of research of how it's beneficial, which is great, but it's about the education to the piece of like, how does this translate to making me healthier and better? And I think it's an understanding of like, this is a tool that when you're in that situation of how to best be able to calm down, to regulate, to be in that system so I'm in a flow state, to be able to make better decisions and right decisions and not make an impact on my health.
Yeah, I mean, for me, like, again, on the mental side of things, like, and I joke around is if you go to a therapist, they're going to tell you to journal because we love homework, right? We know, most of us know that an hour enough for most people is not enough. Like, it'd be great to have 2 hours a week or 3 hours a week or every other day. Like that's, especially if you really want to feel better real quick, it's like an hour. It's like, so we always like fill that gap with homework. It's like, it's just kind of the greatest homework you could give somebody for most people. Cause it doesn't always work. I'm really interested in this research Fred Schaefer's doing around contraction and resonance frequency and that you may not be breathing. And I'm really fascinated with where we're going to take some of this and what's going on there. What are we doing? Like really cool stuff. But it's like, to me, it just like helps to get to the health outcomes, whatever health is to that person. It just supports that for most people. And then trying to find, like you mentioned, where can this be a tool throughout your day? You know, that how are you utilizing this? A resonance frequency breath before that meeting, maybe, or when you feel your stress starting to rise, all that stuff is so crucial.
Plus, I'm saying, like, it's that interceptive ability of being able to feel when that starts to trigger, right? Because a lot of people are so disconnected from what they're trying to be, because they're trying to be able to suppress some of the stuff. It's like, nope, I'm fine, I'm okay, right? And they're boiling over with emotions, and it's to a degree of like, again, doing it on a routine basis of like, okay, what does it mean to actually be in that calm state, right? And when you do that consistently, it's like, again, I don't know if I said this last time on the podcast, but it's like when runners, sometimes you start to be able to track their heart rate when they run, right? And they do it for weeks and weeks and weeks and that type of stuff. And I guarantee you after about a month or so, they wear it on a daily basis, they run a day, you can throw that heart rate monitor out, they know exactly what their heart rate is. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And it's because that interceptive ability with that task has you know, been done on a routine basis. And HRV biofeedback is the exact same way, is that they understand of like, this is where I need to feel and breathe and do that. One of the podcasts I was on, we actually had a, well, it wasn't HRV because we do that, but it was like a breath frequency before we went on the podcast, and to be able to feel the mental clarity that he had beforehand and all the like, oh, everything up here. It's like, no, it's gone. I'm here. I'm present. I'm here. I'm now. I really take that into a lot of what I do when, you know, whether I go on a podcast or I, you know, go to public speak or whatever it may be, you kind of just remember that type of stuff, a couple of those drills and something simple as that, but to have the objective nature of like, no, this is where you're at. This is what's going on, and be able to give you tools of like, hey, this is where we need to be. Again, it's such a critical tool.
Absolutely. So you mentioned a word that I think is I wonder if you've been a little obsessed with it as well, introspection. So it seems like where we're all kind of like, maybe you just like threw it out there because it was the right word to use, but I was like, I'm like obsessed about this, and I know I'm not alone in that. So a word like, honestly, a few months ago, I had to learn how to pronounce it right. I'm still not sure if I'm doing it because there's a weird set of vowels and consonants mixed in there that don't flow off the tongue naturally for me. So I would love, maybe just threw it out because it was the right word to use. But I wonder, is there any thinking about that? Because one of the things that's kind of a fascinating piece of research that kind of combines our two worlds, like the posture of the body, there's a whole segment of research on this and nonverbal, verbal, like all this stuff. And I wonder, like, getting people to reflect on what their mood is, what's going on inside of themselves, what they're feeling, whether that's pain in their shoulder, like you mentioned, or just a dysregulated stress response system. I wonder if you're chasing this rabbit with some of the rest of us around this concept.
Well, absolutely. Right. And so
I figure.
Well, you've seen it a lot in, you know, people won't call it that, but you see it a lot in some of this physical rehab space where some people are just kind of like, they're just super disconnected from what their capabilities are or what they're doing and where they're in space, their proprioception of like, you know, this, they're just very it sounds aggressive to say, but disconnected from the reality that's in front of them as to where they're at, right? And so it's about making that connection and be able to understand those things as things get, so it's easy in a little bit in, you know, my clinical world with people that are in pain, where to a degree, you start to be able to feel when they do a movement where things are, okay, breathe into it, relax it, twist this, that, and be able to use that concept as people do movements. Okay, where do you feel this? What does your neck feel like? Is it calm? What about your toes and your, you know, your thigh and all that? So to be able to work on that for a lot of people, it's been super impactful. Just make that physical connection, especially people that are in pain. We know that people that are in pain, the longer they're in pain, the less connection they have with their body because they don't want to sense it anymore. So they try to be able to relatively disconnect from it. So that's a piece into it. But again, there's so many components of their mood and their emotions that it's hard because again, above my pay grade where people say like, hey, are you stressed? Ah, no, great. Yeah, no, great. Don't sleep. You know, my kids don't like me. You know, my work sucks and, but everything's fine. Yeah, I can deal with it well, right? And you're kind of like, all right, well, you know, there's a lot to unpack there in regards to, your emotional connection that you have into what's going on. But I try to be able to dive into that in regards to the physical aspect, because if we can show that there's a physical disconnect with that, with some of the data that we have, they feel that they're strong or not strong, or they feel that they're flexible or this is painful, whatever it may be, we start to be able to change that reality. I think people are more open to the idea that, hey, maybe some other things in your life are a little disconnected as well. And like, you know, it's get you in the right hands to be able to dial in with that.
Yeah, because I think it's, again, kind of fascinating on my end is the somatic therapies have really taken off in trauma work. Like, and it's such a different, like I said, mental health is cool nowadays for anybody out there. It used to be really boring when I got you sat in a seat, I sat in a seat, we talked for 55 minutes or whatever it was, and then I'd tell you to go journal. Like the movement, the almost release of this is a real cool way to, I think, look at that mind. I even hate to say mind-body connection, because it's like, if it's connected, it means it's two separate systems. And we got to get away from that. Though everything about your expertise and my expertise, it's fun to like cross talk, because you're on one side of it, I'm on the other, and to bring that together. And I think interoception is one of the areas that could be a real powerful bridge to it. But I also find that it can kind of get us into Descartes, you know, connection of, oh, the mind is looking at the body as a separate homunculi sort of thing floating out there. So it's like, it's an area where I'm seeing like homunculi and stuff coming back. It's like, whoa, like we got to keep the learning that we've kind of had here about how do we look at this all as one integrated system. And, you know, I think with interoception, it's a challenge for us to bring, I think, this holistic idea of us as human beings into that arena.
Yeah, again, it's always a difficulty with learning too, right? Because, you know, how we learn is that we put things into these boxes, into these specific structures and whatever it may be. Yeah. And I always use the example of you will throw that out of the window when you start to actually see a cadaver, a human body.
Yeah.
In regards to like, oh, activate this muscle. I'm like, yeah, good luck.
Yeah.
Right. It is literally a big sheath of tissue that it's so like the textbooks make it look great.
Yeah.
But you're underneath, you're like, well, those are two different things.
Yeah.
Right. And you're it's the same thing. Like the amount of things you have to do to be able to make it look that way. And so when people have that idea, like, because again, they'll you know, originally like, oh, you know, activate this muscle, this or that. It's like, my gosh, like it's impossible that if this is active, that has to be active. Like it's you cannot disconnect these things and put in. Now I understand it's how we learn and how we do things, but like you cannot disconnect anything, right? You pull on this, it pulls all the way over there in regards to that, right? So, and I think HRV, again, like that's why I love it so much. It ties all these things together. And I do love it in the fact that it is one of those, as you said, common languages that we can possibly have that you all come back to saying like, you know, to impact this, like we're doing our job, whatever necessarily is. And it could be, it's part of this, it's a part of that, it's a part of here, it's a part of here, but it's all kind of encompassing into that. And that we can all show the value of all of our interventions and of all of our expertise by this one specific biomarker. So that's why, to me, it's like such an impactful thing, because that's why I love it. I'll never get rid of it. And is crazy, as long as I've been talking about this, you know, topic, it's just, it's still to the point, I think, you know, I think it's the understanding is not fully there from a lot of the people of what the potential of this. And again, it's not something that's the difficulty is like, it's not actionable. Like if this is low, you do this, or this is high, you do this, or whatever it may be. So it's, you know, people think that it's going to tell you exactly what you need to be able to change. And it's like, not so much, right? It's just this overall umbrella. To this day, I will still say this to the point that I don't think there's more of a holistic biomarker that's more important than that. Right. Yes, there's some phenomenal biomarkers, but the fact that it's non-invasive, the fact that it's continuous, the fact that it impacts by all whole health interventions and has an abundance of research that show that all these things are connected. I don't know one other marker that can show you all that.
It's still there. And one of the things that I wonder, because you've been in this longer than I have, and I'm, like I said, even though like we didn't meet each other until after I obsessed about your course over and over, think about how to bring this into the mental health space. And now weirdly, we're working with elite athletes, which is like, hey, you know, it's the journey. So
thank goodness.
So it's like, okay, it's, you know, but I wonder as somebody who's been on this journey longer than I have, one of the things I have a little bit of excitement and concern over, and I'd love to just get your take on this. I've seen this happen with trauma. Is 20 years ago, nobody was talking about trauma. I went through a whole master's in counseling psychology back in the late 90s. I don't remember trauma being mentioned one time. And in fairness to my training, we weren't talking about that as a field at that point. The adverse childhood experience study was being done when I was being trained. And now trauma is being thrown around in ways that I get a little scared of at times too. And as somebody who's watched Yahoo's like me come into the field and, you know, this energy around it, I wonder what excitement you have and what concern you have as you see more and more of us. You know, it is kind of your fault because you did put a course out there, a great course, by the way, that I still think is, probably doesn't need updated, because I go back and look at those slides all the time and it's like, yeah, this is still great, great work. Like, what are your concerns? What are your areas of excitement as more people come to where we're nerding out about?
Yeah, I think one of the things that I've kind of concerned about is the fact, you know, there are some certain things like limitations. Like we have professional limitations. We also have physical limitations. People can have obsessive over these, you know, I mean, I would classify them as normal heart rate variability scores, but because they're not like exceptional, they're like, they're losing their minds. Right. Yeah. And I go to the point, it's like, not everyone's going to be an Olympic athlete. Even you can try absolutely as hard as you possibly can, but it's just like, you know, to me, if you have a normal heart rate variability and you've done your blood work, you're seeing people for mental health, you feel pretty good in that side of things, you're addressing these emotional things, you're doing all the right things underneath the book. Like, there's not some hidden thing that's in there that is causing this stuff, right? It's just to the point that you're going to have these limitations as to where you are. If everything's right as rain, you're feeling great, and your HRV seems to be in the normal range, then your goal is to keep it there for as absolute as long as possible,
exactly.
Right? Like, yeah. Like, if you have a VO2 max, it's like, you know, 50, which is like really good type of score, right? And but it's like, oh, I want to be 70. It's like, I don't know what to tell you, man. Like, if you're training to do everything like that, I don't think it's possible, right? But the goal is, I mean, if you keep it at 50 and you stay at 50, you're there. I mean, my gosh, like, that is an unbelievable accomplishment to be able to work at. So my one thing is, you know, I've actually had to, I've done a couple, you know, introductory calls for, you know, clients that want to be able to come on for HRV, that type of stuff. And they're going through what they're doing. And I'm like, listen, I think you're fine. Like, I couldn't add anything.
Yeah.
Like, can I, you know, I'll take money and just give you some, absolutely. But I'm like, listen, like, keep doing what you're doing. Like, it's fine. Yeah. It's, I'm not too worried. So that's where my concern is the fact that, you know, people become hyper obsessed around a normal value, and that side of things. But, as long as you're checking everything else, everything's dialed in, then, you know, just keep where you're at. And that's the hope. My big thing, my hope is again, very similar to kind of where you're in, is just the unity around, you know, the objective nature of things to be able to kind of classify or give some insights into, you know, different areas of health well-being a little bit more, right? In that assessment tool of that. And because again, like, it's a difficult experience for me to be able to try to say, like, hey, right, there's no point of really diving in your physiology because we got some psychology or past trauma that seems to be president over of that stuff. And my hope is that with the companies like yourself and all the companies in the other spaces, to be able to bring that objective nature into what's going on and use this technology that we have and how it can expand to different areas to provide that. It's the biggest thing is I want people to be empowered, to be able to kind of create their own changes. I don't want them to feel that I have the problems to fix things. I always say that. It's like, listen, I'm not going to fix anything.
Yeah.
That's it. My job is to be able to figure out where we have limitations and be able to work on those limitations, but you're the whole thing to be able to create this change and take that ownership. The amount of times I've had to, like, you know, people tell them what to be able to do and they don't do it. And they go away for a few months to come back and be like, hey, I'm back again. I'm like, listen, you're wasting my time.
Exactly.
Honestly, like, it's not worth the effort that I'm putting in to say the exact same thing that you just haven't done.
Yeah.
And so it's, if you want more of a, you know, a cheerleader, you can go find them. That's completely fine. But, like, you know, I want people to be able to listen, like, you got to take ownership over this and be able to put the work in. I'll kind of help guide you and give you the right tools to be able to do that. So to provide some back to that, was a big rant, but back to the fundamental aspect of it all is the hope that the fact that the different areas of health well-being can be able to be under one roof and have this one, you know, goal that we can all communicate together and have this. That's my big picture when it comes to heart rate variability and these non-invasive biometrics that we can get.
I love it. So I got to ask this question while I have you, because that would have been a great piece to just end on if I was a smarter person, but I'm not. I wonder if you see, and I'm just that I always like to say speculation is fine here, but let's, if we want to call it that, that's good too. You know, as I have gotten in a little bit to the elite performance space, and I don't do a ton of that still to the, so I don't claim any, I'm trying to get people, I'm all about the zone two stuff. It's like walk, because if you're not doing anything, that like walking is great. And it's actually great. It's not like, oh, it's less than running. For a lot of people, it's probably way better than running. So I wonder, because I almost hear that like some of the folks you might work with, do you think some of like the obsession is in some ways, and again, I'm just speculation, we can throw that out there, almost like a trauma response. Is this is a coping skill to be obsessed with? Because I listen to some of these podcasts and I'm like, when do you have time to do anything else except track your biometrics? Like, and it becomes almost like a weird coping skill or something. Do you have any, like, again, we can call it speculation, you can call it insight if you have some more, you know, clinical insight into it. But like, do you think you are dealing with trauma to some extent when you hit these issues?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, because you get people just, again, just hyper obsessed about these.
That hyper vigilant kind of mentality.
Yeah, and when I start to be able to see that, it's where you start to be able to, again, like disconnect. Again, it's about using that, again, very similar to the biofeedback. So you get to the space, you understand what it feels like. Okay, now go use it. Like, you got your feedback. It now just implement, right? You don't need to be hyper-obsessed from day to day now. Like, it's just implemented, blah, blah, blah. If I see it to a point, I'm like, listen, take the strap off, stop measuring it.
Yeah.
Like, just go live life, be happy for a bit, and let's get back in 3 months.
Yeah.
Right? And this is what I'm saying. Like, I like to assess because it gives you exactly the direction, but I don't need to them to like continuously monitor all the time and that type of stuff. Like the day to day, like, let's just work on this for a while and see, you know, maybe give some, you know, the first couple of weeks, the feedback, hey, things are good. Okay, great. Just keep going what you're doing and kind of ignore the numbers. Like just live, right? Yeah. Even now to the point, like I keep measuring stuff in various ways. I don't think I've checked my data in the last 3 days. Like I don't know what it is, but I'll look back and be like, hey, how were things? And I'll have an idea of what it's like. Oh, I'm not obsessed. If I got a bad night's sleep, so what? If I felt great and I slept well and it says my sleep was bad, well, whatever. It is what it is, right? And so it's about, are things going the right direction overall? And I'll go look back in the last month and in May, and hopefully things are, you know, we're better than the month before.
Right. Absolutely. I love that. And that's good advice for everybody out there too, is like, it gives you a data point. And there's so many things, like, as somebody having to obsess, and I know, like, about artifacts, for example. Yeah. If you burp during a reading, we try the best we can to take that data out, but it's good. Like, you know, it's almost like that 7-day average, looking at those things, like, so much more. I mean, we're working with Optimal to kind of take out, because we threw like Optimal Zone in there to tell you you're in low frequency during your training, your biofeedback. And oh man, it's like, I know the person out, because I'm one of those that can get there. I've just practiced mindfulness for 15 years. So I can identify when the obsessive Matt is taking over and stop him. But it's just like, okay, we need to turn that off for people, because it's hurting their experience, and they need to be in the moment of the breathing and not obsess of whether or not they're getting an A or a B on their test. And it's a fascinating thing to see for folks.
I remember that back in the day, that was a feature for BioForce and Elite HRV, but they have to the point of like, you can blind your athletes to the day values, right? And I was I'm like, why do people do? And then, and like a couple of months in, I'm like, okay.
Yeah, there you go.
Now I see why they want that gone.
There you go. It's like, we're going to measure this. We're just not going to get it.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you.
Oh, human beings. You're human beings. No matter what direction you work with us, we are fascinating. Well, Greg, it has been an absolute pleasure to talk to you again. I'll just say, if it's okay with you, we can put in the show notes. I'm interested in that new course you did with Jason as well. So where people can keep up with you and your work. And like I said, if you haven't heard Greg teach, he is one of the best teachers. You know, I get to talk to great folks, like I get to work with Dr. Ina Hazan and Gewurz and Schaefer, and you are right there as one of my great teachers in this field. So I appreciate the time I get to have with you. And we'll put links where people can get to those courses. And I know probably a few people, their question is, do I have to be in Vancouver to work with Greg? So maybe you can address that to kind of funnel the emails that might, because you did say you work with individuals. So maybe before I let you leave here, what would an individual interested in working with the legend that is Greg, do they have to be in Vancouver? Let's put it that way.
Yeah, no, you don't have to be Vancouver. Vancouver, we kind of, again, the clinic that I'm working at, we really dive in deep to a lot of these areas and kind of, take the high performance or kind of those people that really need a lot of answers and provide a lot of solutions for them. But I take on, because of the course and all that stuff, I have taken on like a few clients that I do. I keep it very small. And so if you go to gregelliott.ca there's a way to apply, and I'll kind of let you know that there's opportunities when you do that and when things come through. It's a small part of what I do, mainly because people just want answers. And so if people are really diligent in it and they really want to be able to work, I'll obviously do it. But it's a small group of people. Typically, it's about 5 people at a time that I take over on a month-to-month basis. It's kind of what I limit myself to. But anything from there, you'll find there's ebooks there. There's you can link to the courses, link to the place in regards to seeing me in Vancouver. But yeah, so you can find me online there, and more stuff coming out very soon.
Sounds good. Well, my friend, I can't wait for our next conversation. Keep up your amazing work, and just appreciate you.
Matt and Zach, same to you. Obviously, I'm falling in love with you. I love what you're doing. Keep it up. It's such a refreshing sight to see you do all the phenomenal work that you do in a parallel kind of field as me, not the same, but to see all the growth and achievement of that area and what you're doing there. I'm so proud of you, and keep it up.
Thank you so much, my friend. And as always, you can find show notes, everything else at OptimalHRV.com. Greg, appreciate you. Appreciate our listeners. And we'll see you next week.